Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Pursuit Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Entenair, and this week we have an absolute treat in store for you as we dive into the world of archery with the legend himself, Travis T-Bone Turner. First, we get into Travis's humble beginnings and his journey in the hunting industry and how he connected with the iconic hunting brand, Realtree. We also discuss Travis's courageous battle with cancer and how he's found strength and resilience while adapting to his new normal. Finally, we get into the world of building perfectly tuned arrows and components. Travis shares his wisdom and provides invaluable tips for those of you who are eager to explore the craft of building your own arrows or tuning your own bow. Please welcome Travis T-Bone Turner.
Okay. We're all set.
So that is the 70th clap I've heard that man do. And I tell you, I get butterflies. I don't care if it's you, it's Waddell, it's the neighbor down the street. Every time that clap, it makes it more real.
Go time.
It's yep. Go time. Yeah, man. Well, first of all, thank you for taking the time to join us today. Like I said, you are the one of the gentlemen with Waddell that, we kind of grew up watching. You know, you guys are kind of some pioneers in this industry, if you will. And so, you know, having you guys and shout out to Ramsey, Ramsey Mills for setting us up with Waddell. And then of course you, and it's exciting to have you on. So Travis T-Bone Turner, not in the house. I wish he was in the house, but he's in the flesh or joining us remotely from down there in good old Georgia. Thanks for taking the time today, Travis.
Oh man. Thanks for having me, guys. I know we've been chit chatting about this for a couple of weeks, couple of months, and glad to finally sit down and have a chit chat.
Oh, for sure. And we're a bunch of archery nerds and hunting nerds, and we like killing things, and we like using good equipment, so this mm-hmm. will be a fun conversation.
Yeah.
He told me that he's always getting Waddell's sloppy seconds. So if Waddell's out there, thanks for listening, but this will be just as fun. This is a completely yeah. unique conversation for sure. So let's not talk about turkeys. He does enough of that already. Well, like I said, you're a super humble guy. And, I've listened to quite a bit of podcasts you've on, just making sure that I had all my ducks in a row in terms of this conversation. And, I think the industry is never larger than one person, you're just a humble guy, I guess I should say. And, you guys, and Waddell and the whole.
That sounded like there was a fat joke in there.
No fat jokes in there. It's easy for someone to get a big head, and I feel like the collection of folks over there at Bone Collector, yourself included, and Nick and Waddy, you guys are down to earth. I think Waddell's conversation was one of the most down to earth conversations that we've ever had, and mm-hmm. I expect this one to be very much the same way. And so, it's refreshing to have guys of your stature, come on and just talk to a bunch of novice hunters, and we're looking forward to it. So, before we get started, I wanted to lighten the mood just a little bit more. I joked before we got recording. So about last week on your Facebook page, I saw the T-Bone Turner special bait. He should package this stuff. I don't know why he hasn't already. Go ahead and hit my resident angler here. You were choking some largemouth bass there in your pond with a very special snack bait. If you remember what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, yeah. Actually, I've got several ponds here on our farm, we've got bass, brim, and catfish in there, and. And the bait that I caught on last week, which was a combination of Slim Jim and Cheetos on a hook, and that's true story. And we actually always fish with it. I mean, and don't get me wrong, crickets work good. And me and my family will get together, and we got some really huge brim in there, and just about everything bites that kind of stuff. But rather than having to buy bait and such, I discovered a long time ago, a Slim Jim has that rough kind of hide on the outside, like jerky, stays on the hook. You can catch three or four fish with it, the catfish and brim and, even bass sometimes hit it. So it's worked real good for us. And then I always tell people, if it's a bad day fishing, you still got a snack, you can go home.
Heck yeah.
Slim Jims.
That's awesome.
Oh, T-Bone over here like Randy Savage. Oh yeah. Some of those Gen Z people might not get that commercial reference. That's awesome. Yeah, so hey, if you're ever in need, when I was growing up we would always go rent a boat, and I know, like you said, you were from Ohio, and we'll get into that a little bit here too, but down in Southeast Ohio, there's a Lake Burr Oak, which you're familiar with. We used to always do hot dogs.
Yeah.
You know, like put a hot, like cut up a hot dog and throw it on. And hey, if you're hungry and you're hungry enough, you'll eat a cold hot dog too.
Yeah, we've used hot dogs quite a bit, but then I thought a Slim Jim's a lot tougher, and plus a Brim can get it in his mouth pretty easy. So I thought, man, I'm just gonna go with the Slim Jim, and plus it's got a little spicy. And then when it touches water, you know how you spray some of your baits down, and it's real oily and stuff. And the Slim Jim's even more oilier than a. It's worked like a champ, man. That hide on there is tough.
So, there you go, man.
I'm going to have to try that out up here.
And you don't have to refrigerate it when you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, there's your so we've been doing a bi-weekly bait series here with one of our pro staff members. I think we need to throw some Slim Jims on the mix. He makes fun of me for being a meat chucker anyway, so.
I don't. Brian does. Yeah.
I got like a little farm John boat. It's called a pontoon boat, P-O-N-E boat. It's only 16 foot long, perfect for in a pond. I'm going to see if I can't get it wrapped in the Slim Jim colors.
There you go. Well, I doubt anyone from Slim Jim is listening, but if you want a sponsorship, we'll do what we can.
Yeah.
Before we get too far, I want to go ahead and introduce yourself. Obviously, a lot of people know who you are, but may not know. Like I didn't know earlier that you were from Western Ohio. So if you can, let's go ahead and introduce yourself. And then after that, we'll get into how you got tied up with Waddy and the gang.
Yeah. My name's Travis Turner, a.k.a. T-Bone, co-host with Michael and Nick on Bone Collector, as well as tied in with Realtree for, 25 plus years between their Monster Buck series, Realtree road trips and such. So all three of us absolutely bleed Realtree. So also the spokesperson for Whitetails Unlimited, which I know if you're from Ohio, you're well all about Whitetails Unlimited. So yeah, between all that, that's kind of, and my background also is been a professional archer. I used to shoot tournaments nonstop religiously from about 1988 to about 2002, and then a career path kind of switched gears then and did more stuff with TV, but still like to shoot a little tournaments. And just like you guys said, I sold my store. I had my own archery shop there for a while, sold it in 2006, and I kind of got out of the retail side of things, and we built our house, me and my wife did, and 2008, and I built an archery range and a shop in the basement. And my wife said, "Why are you doing this? You sold the shop like 3 years ago." And I'm like, "I said, honey, even if I dipped septic tanks for a living, I'm still going to be doing something with archery. Magical Fly to the Era is going to be a part of me till I'm pushing up daisies." So I love everything to do with archery, and no matter how you guys know this, no matter how much you know, no matter how good you are, you can always get better. So it's, if you can bend a string, archery is a wonderful therapeutic sport.
Oh, for sure. It's definitely one of those sports, too. Like you mentioned Whitetails Unlimited. I had talked to Justin Ross, who mm-hmm. we had on the podcast before, and he's been there and seen you speak at these events. And he tells us he actually is running a 3D challenge course, kind of like the Total Archery shirt that I have on right now. But it's a local, smaller one, and everything benefits local programs here in the state. But he's told us, if you're having a bad day, go shoot your bow, or go fletch six arrows, or go fletch a arrow. It's the tension and the focus that you need to do that stuff. It just kind of melts away everything else.
It's a meditation.
Oh, for sure.
Gets you away from, the stress and everything going on in your life. It's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Just like fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like it. For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
We mentioned that. So go ahead.
I said, I always can compare archery to, kind of a cross between NASCAR and golf, because you're always working on your equipment, you're always trying to build a better mousetrap, fletching arrows, there's all kinds of different combinations. And then also it's one of the few sports like golf that you need to suppress your nervous energy. It has lighting involved, undulation, wind, yardage guessing, all of these things come into play, like so much on golf. Like if you're a baseball player or football player, you want that adrenaline rush, that nervous energy, you want that. But archery is one of those things, it's really a mind game, such as golf, where you got to suppress those nervous energies and rely heavily on relaxed muscle memory.
You know, I'm glad that you said that too, because it's funny. Golf is, you know, I mean, I'm 35, so I feel like inevitably I'm going to get into that. But golf is another one of those things that I find the same stuff in. Like, now, granted, I'm not Tiger Woods, and I'm not shooting nearly as good as those guys. But that pre-shot, you know, now you say that, and I'm thinking about it. That pre-shot, before I get ready to go shoot, you feel that same. Like, I can see myself feeling the same way on the golf course as I do on, you know, on the shooting line or on the target line. So it's interesting that you said that, because it definitely, there's definitely a comparable aspect to that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. I've always compared it. I love golf, actually. I don't like playing. Never have really played. I played in my 20s, you know, just because a bunch of us guys got together and it was a great thing to do. But college football and golf are my two favorite sports to watch. I follow it closely. I'm good friends and with a lot of the pro golfers and work on their boats and such. But, man, I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I do too. I do too, and especially being in Georgia, you're not too far from the best golf course in the world either. So,
been there a couple of times. Yeah, it's amazing.
Look at this guy. What's your favorite college football team? Because, you know, Ben knows I'm a college football fanatic. I live and breathe it. Obviously, being here in Central Ohio, don't tell me the Georgia Bulldogs now.
Yeah, we just happen to be the reigning national champions.
Oh man, I tell you, you were about 6 feet from watching us from TV at home, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, for the Buckeyes too. I bleed SEC, but, you know, having roots in Ohio, I pull for the Buckeyes, and certainly in the Big Ten, I pull for them. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's fun, man. I love it. That's you know, unfortunately, it messes up a lot of my Saturday hunting in the fall because I can't miss it. But going back to that, how did you? And I know you said you got connected with Waddy and stuff and Nick, but through the road trip series and other things, Monster Bucks and stuff with Realtree. How did you get to that point where you guys were meeting up at Realtree and ultimately becoming kind of a coordinate group there?
Well, I'll take you back a little further. You know, to how I got to Ohio is Dad was a fireman for Dayton, Ohio, and we moved down to Georgia. He took a job with the city of Atlanta. They let him transfer his time, so we moved down here when I was five. So I've basically been in Georgia since I was five. I grew up closer to Atlanta, worked for Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta after high school, and, you know, it was just a hustle and bustle, and I started working in the archery at a shop just outside of Atlanta. Took a huge pay cut from working for Mercedes-Benz, but I thought while I'm young and, you know, didn't have a house payment, have a family to support, it was just me, I could afford to take a pay cut, and I wanted to pursue something that I had a passion for. I was doing good and making good money, but I knew I didn't want to drive to the center of Atlanta every day to work for
sure.
Yeah, so I started doing stuff in archery because I was shooting tournaments so much, and kind of learned the retail side of things for about 2 years, and then moved south. You know, about an hour south of Atlanta is where I live in the same county where I moved to. Me and a buddy of mine opened up a store down here. Real humble beginnings, took a long time to catch some traction, you know, 2 or 3 years of eating a lot of them bologna sandwiches and frozen pizzas and stuff, man. A lot of times I'd go 3 and 4 days and not even put $150 in the register, and I'm, you know, scratching my head thinking, what am I doing, man? I am just a sinking ship. But finally, you know, between having a good reputation of working on bows and you know, tournament background, caught some traction, the store started doing real well. We started hosting tournaments and stuff. By moving an hour south, this was in the early 90s, by moving farther south, it put me an hour from Columbus, Georgia, which is where Realtree is based out of, and Waddell and David Blanton lived closer to me, so they lived even, you know, within about 30 minutes. They started coming to the store. We built a great relationship. I'd mentioned to David Blanton, I said, listen, 90s, you guys are the premier VHS series. There's only 3 or 4 hunting shows that are even on TV, which was on TNN and ESPN back then. And I said, you guys have so many country music stars and ball players. And, you know, and it always bothered me, you guys being archery gurus, you know what I'm talking about. Like, you see a print ad and you got a guy that's anchored way behind his head, or, you know, he don't even have a peep sight, or the peep sight's way up here. You can just tell that if you've got any little sense about yourself as an archer and you look at an ad like that, it's like, well, it lost all validity. I can't believe that company, because this ad or this commercial doesn't even look authentic at all. I mean, it's just like they got some model out of New York to draw this bow back. So with that said, I told Realtree, I said, listen, you guys are doing so much in print ad and so much in TV. I said, not that I'm the king of all kings on archery. I said, but being as I'm close by, I wanted to offer my services to help get anybody that you guys were taking hunting or introducing them into archery or being like a consultant, so to speak, because I want whoever you guys are taking to have a great introduction into archery, you know, because we all know you got to be tailor fitted with this. So if somebody, because that's the way I started, is I got a bad introduction into archery. So if you get too heavy of a bow, too long a draw, and you're hitting your arm all the time, you're instantly going to be turned off from archery. So it's really crucial from a shop standpoint or for some whoever you're getting set up, get set up with the right, you know, the right draw length, the right weight, you know, and then because you and I, we all know, we can set someone up that's never shot a bow before, and if you, you know, you've got some qualifications behind you, you can have that person hitting the baseball every time at 20 yards within, you know, 25 shots. And then just see that overwhelming satisfaction and confidence grow over them. So with that, I'm selling that to David, basically just saying, you know, I just want to offer my services free. And he said, man, that makes all the sense in the world, because even then they were getting their bows set up at, like, you know, a lot of the mass merchant stores, not to squat on them, but nonetheless, they got a high turnover rate. They got high school kids going in there that most of the people that are going in there to shop probably know more about working on a bow than the bow technicians that a lot of these mass merchant stores have. Let's just be honest. And, you know, I cut my teeth with a mom-and-pop shop, an independent retailer, somebody that's got qualified staff. And even to this day, you know, 25, 30 years later, that is invaluable. I mean, that's something that the Internet is never going to be able to take away from. That's something that, that, you know, the mass merchant's never going to be able to compete with. Service quality that you get from a pro shop, an independent retailer, is going to far surpass anything that you do in, you know, Internet and stuff. So being the late liaison to Realtree and setting them up, and then that graduated on. I set a bow up for Jeff Foxworthy. He had never bow hunted. This was right around 2000, and they had asked me, because of my tournament background, to set up the 3D course that they always shot in mixed in with the Monster Bucks DVDs and the videos and such. They said, hey, you know, can you got any ideas about a course? And I had all the targets because I had a course, you know, a tournament range here. So I would set up their courses, and I thought, man, this is awesome. I'm just involved in Realtree. Even if it's 100% behind the scenes, I get to go shoot tournaments. I get to run my store. I'm like, man, I'm grinding out a living, and, you know, I'm finally graduating to a real quality frozen pizza like a DiGiorno now. And then they asked me to be in the videos and asked me if I could come up with a character to play alongside Jeff Foxworthy. We had come up with a skit that Foxworthy was going to be a part of that. And I come up with the T-Bone character. I never had been called T-Bone ever. And 5 minutes before we began filming, I had a big floppy hat, the Bubba teeth in, and I took an old white tail, and I was shooting it with a, you know, a Carter hinge release, and you know, that was kind of a telltale sign. Everybody said, man, I knew you could shoot whenever you're shooting that old bow with that thing. And, you know, we had fun with it. It was real accurate to shoot. And we really had fun. I thought, well, this is my 15 minutes of fame. I'm going to be on Monster Bucks. And that was as far as it was going to go. But, man, everybody loved the comedy that we introduced in there. Yeah. The monotony of just nothing but 30 or 40 hunts on a video. And they loved the you know, the bantering back and forth and such. And Realtree then started asking me to do more and more and more. And through this whole time, you know, Nick was a camera guy for Realtree, and Waddell was a cameraman, and, you know, and kind of hosted a few hunts. And along that same time, me and Nick and Waddell are all about the same age, very similar personalities. We all come from humble beginnings, and we became great friends and started doing stuff with Realtree road trips. And then, you know, that graduated on to in 2007, 2008 to doing Bone Collector. And then in the meantime, you know, a guy had approached me about selling my store. So I ran my store for 12 or 13 years, and everything just lined up perfectly. I got to sell my store. You know, most independent retailers, they usually just dissolve. And I got to sell my business. I worked for 2 years, you know, transitioning all of my clientele to the new store. And we started Bone Collector, and I thought, we'll do this for 2 or 3 years, and, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. We'll see how it goes. And Lord knows, I mean, here we are 15, 16 years later, and still, you know, thankfully so many people like to watch us be knuckleheads on TV. So.
The original knuckleheads, for sure, that's for sure. Yeah, I remember seeing the pictures of you with the teeth in. Actually, when we first got this set up, one of our good buddies is on the pro staff team, Andrew. I said, hey, you won't believe who I got. And he's like, oh, what? And I just sent him that picture of you with the teeth in, all crooked teeth and hillbilly. He said, no way. And I said, yeah, man. He's like, awesome. With all that said, I mean, a little bit more of a serious. So life handed you a pretty big curveball. What was it, last year? Earlier last year or end of 20? I can't remember which.
Summer of 21.
Summer of 21. So with that said, I mean, I'm sure you've had a lot of ups and downs, a lot of bad days and good days. But to me in the outside world, you've handled it very well, and it seems even very positive and very appreciative. And, you know, during that journey, I know it's one that kind of speaks close to his heart too. But so just as you're going, if you can, just kind of give us an update on kind of where you are. I know you were struggling with a lot of different stuff in terms of, you know, billing and hospital stuff and all that jazz. So if you can, just kind of give us an update on where you are today.
Yeah, still adjusting to the normal, you know, and then things are never going to be the same again. And, you know, just to give you, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, have, and I think I've had a great attitude about it. And that is not, you know, something that I put on for social media or whatever. I really feel that way most all the time. But I'd be lying if I said there hadn't been some days where I had my lip poked out. But, you know, because it does kind of stink. But for the most part, you know, like I've said on so many podcasts and stuff, like, you know, I'm truly blessed. Because, you know, if you'd have asked me when I was 20 years old, if I would have done the things that I've done up to this point in my life, I would have, I've far outlived my dreams, and I've far out, you know, killed more critters than I ever thought that I ever would. I mean, if I don't kill another cockroach, I mean, honestly, I've way outlived my dreams. So I'm real fortunate. I can still shoot my bow. I still work on my bow, and I've hunted, and I've, you know, over there last year, a couple of deer last year, you know, so I'm adapting. I just have to lose some weight so that I can rehab on my prosthetic leg. I have my prosthetic leg now, but a lot of people don't know that on my left leg, the leg that I have, I cut my three toes off on that foot when I was like 13 years old. So I'm not the most agile on that one leg as it is. So the three toes that my pinky toe and the other three toes, they're on there. They sewed them back on, but they don't really work. So I don't have the best, even when I had two legs. So basically, I've just got like a peg leg over there. And the thing about people don't understand too, you know, if you know, I'm heavier, and then as well as a little older. When you're rehabbing, you know, it's not like I'm not fearless, and or I'm not 20 years old again. So I can't really try a lot of things, because if I fail and fall, I can't afford to fall too many times, because if I damage my shoulders, my elbow, my wrist, I can't get around at all. I mean, I can't walk her to get to the bathroom and things like that. So it's not that I can't rehab, but I got to be, whatever I try, I got about just about 100% know that I can do it, or do it without, you know, really having a fall. So it's a slower process. It's not just like, hey, man, just bounce across your one leg across here and let's see how that goes. That you can't just try. And so anyway, it's slower than normal. I figured I would bounce back a little bit better, but you know, I've got a wheelchair and I've got a walker, and you know, I'm able to drive. I got hand controls on my truck, so I can drive, because it is my right leg that I'm lost, and so I've got hand controls on my truck, so I'm able to drive it, and you know, a four-wheeler, I can get around on it, and you know, side by side. And I've got a an off-road wheelchair if I needed it, but
there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm getting around and got ways to get around, but, yeah, I would like to, my biggest goals is to, I love doing land management on a tractor, skid steer, those kind of things. And I just can't, I'm not able to get into those safely now without a prosthetic leg. It's going to take that or coming up with some type of creative lift or something to get me in those things. And I'm going to do that, because I want to be able to do that over, you know, being able to go hunting again. I mean, and don't get me wrong, it's important, but golly, I would be, that's my number one goal, you know, as far as, I just want to be able to get my skid steer and go. So That's what we're working towards. But yeah, every Thursday night we have our archery shoot night. We're having our get together. It's just invitation only. You know, usually 10 to 20 guys get together. We got 20 targets set up. Man, we always have a great time getting together. So we're starting that. So every Thursday night from here on out, we'll be having get-togethers and stuff. So.
I love it. I love it. Was it, you call that what, knockbusters? Is that what you call it? Knockbusters?
Yeah. I got to be careful because, I mean, so many people are calling me up, man, I want to come. And I'm like, man, it's got to be an invitational thing. It might be something like the Masters. Maybe we make it West Central Georgia the Masters. You got to be invite only.
There you go. There you go. You got to put into the lottery, like going out west and hunting, right? That's your Kansas, Iowa. You got to pay T-Bone 100. What's the out of state in Kansas? Like almost $400. Yeah, pay T-Bone $400, and you might get drawn.
That's right.
With all that said, I probably know the answer to this, but I had it written down. With all that said, in terms of your prosthetic, I know you were fighting with that, and I heard you on the Whitetail Edge podcast say you got approval, so you do have that. You're able to start that process. Have you been able to get out and to chase any animals this year so far in terms of bird hunting, or how's your hunting approach changed now with all this?
It's pretty much, especially for turkeys, it's pretty much everything with a ground blind. I'm by no means mad at turkeys as waddell is. So I feel like waddell kills so many of them, it behooves me to sit back and let a few of them live. We got a few here. Actually, I was just telling a friend of mine, we heard one gobbling on the back of the property, and me and him was on the back porch, and I just started calling with my mouth, and I sent the video to Waddell, and he's like, man, why didn't you shoot that thing? I called one all the way up to the back porch. I mean, like,
wow.
Just with my mouth. Yeah, he was 30 yards in the backyard, and I videoed the whole thing and sent it to Waddell, and he goes, dude, I would have had to shoot that thing. And so I didn't. It's kind of a, you know, we got some gobblers around here, but we still got a couple weeks on our season, so I'm gonna try to get out and at least pop one this spring.
Yeah, by the time that this airs, we'll probably be pretty almost wrapped up with ours, but we just switched over to all-day hunting now. Mm-hmm. Monday, I think it switched over to all-day hunting. So I've been out – I got to do dad duties during the week. I've been out twice, opening day, each Saturday, and probably put them about 10, 15 miles so far. But public land hunting up here is hard, buddy. It's a challenge for sure, but I'll keep at it. Keep at it. On the lines of hunting, I know I heard you on the Whitetail Edge podcast again. One of our pro staff members is actually on that team too. That's why it kind of piqued my interest up. So, but I said you had a phenomenal 2020 year. You made a joke. You said it's almost like I did a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
But if you can, let's get into that 2020 hunting season, because I'm sure that has to be, of all the things you killed, that's probably been one of the best ones that you've had.
Yes, it is. They've all been special by all means, you know, because we get to fortunate enough to travel over and a lot of quality critters across there. But man, just everything lined up. I guess what made that so special is they were three of probably my larger deer, and you know, two of them I killed off my home property here in Georgia, and the other one was my farm that I have in Kansas. I got to kill my largest whitetail ever. It grossed 183, and then I had two absolute stompers here in Georgia, and we was going after those. And while I'm in Kansas, I'm getting pictures of the, which hunting in Georgia is kind of tough as it is, but I'm getting pictures of the two deer that we were after that had matured up, had two pictures of them daylighting here back in Georgia. So it was frustrating. I'm out there saying, sorry about that, guys. My son came into the room. So I'm like, golly, here I am in Kansas. I've killed this deer. I got to get back home, man, while these deer are daylighting, because you know how they are, the vampires, especially down here in Georgia, it seems like they do. So I got back here, and it was my son's birthday, and was able to, a big typical, which he ended up grossing 161, I was able to get him. Self-filmed him, actually. My buddy who works with me and films wasn't able. It was on a Friday. We went and had dinner with my son, and I knew that deer was coming out. You know, he's coming out on a regular basis, and we ate dinner like at 3:30 that day. As soon as they got out of school, my wife's a teacher, and we were sitting there and we were wrapping things up for dinner about 5 o'clock. And I'm thinking like, man, I don't want to go home and, you know, I want to go sit in the stand, you know, because it's deer's daylight. And I asked him, I said, hey guys, y'all mind if I go hunt this evening? I mean, we'll be back and continue the birthday stuff right after dark. And they said, oh yeah, Dad, go ahead. And my son was going to be talking with his friends and stuff. So I went and jumped in the stand, grabbed a camera, and lo and behold, he came out.
Wow.
He melted me down for like 30 minutes. Just took forever to come in. You know, I was in a redneck blind and had does all around, and they were so skittish, and I opened the blind up. And this is in September, and it was hot. I mean, I guarantee I lost 10 pounds that evening. I was sweating like crazy. Cracked the window open and got a shot at him, and he died. And the whole time that I'm hunting this deer, I'm getting pictures on my cell phone from 400 yards away of the other buck that I was wanting. He's daylight.
Wow.
Same day, and he ended up where he was at, I really couldn't make a move on him daylight-wise, bow. So I had to be patient and wait till muzzleloader season, which was another 2.5 weeks away. So when muzzleloader came in, the wind was wrong the first day, so the second day we went after him and got him. He was daylight and still, and he ended up grossing 186. So, yeah, he's the number two non-typical muzzleloader in the entire state of Georgia ever. Yeah, so...
That's awesome.
Yeah, phenomenal. I mean, absolute phenomenal. I mean, yeah, in some ways I have scratched my head. I must have made a deal with the devil and said, you get to kill these bucks, but you're going to lose a leg next year.
Yeah. That's giving Lee and those boys in Atlanta some run for their money, right?
Oh, yeah, man. Those guys, I'm friends with them even before they gained traction. Yep. And stuff. And I told them, I said, don't get me wrong, mucho respect for them for what they're doing, but knowing how hard it is to get, you know, to what they have to go through, I don't envy them at all. Meaning, like, we have to worry about raising deer and getting them to a certain age around here, and you know, we're in the country, whereas they're in the city. I'm like, I can't imagine the stress of having to sit up in the hand and not having to. You're worried about the wind switch, and you're worried about, is that UPS man going to deliver a package at prime time and run my deer off? Yeah.
So, no doubt.
They
no
got
doubt.
Other things to contend with, man. It would be so frustrating.
We haven't had a chance to talk to those guys yet. I'd like to. We talked to Taylor Chamberlain, who runs around with those guys too. I'm sure you know him. He gave us some pretty fun stories about hunting deer in the burbs and all the stuff he's got. I think there's one video he was filming, and a guy started up his like Ferrari or something, and it was like, rah! You know, like, starting up in the garage as he's backing out. He's like, yeah, no worries about it, no worry.
Yeah, they had the cops called on him too.
Yeah.
And the guy ran out there with his gun drawn and everything. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, earlier,
a lot of crazy stuff.
I don't know if you guys remember or not, but you know, we filmed several shows hunting in New Jersey and Pennsylvania in the suburbs. And
I'll have to go look.
Yeah, it's back, you know, around 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012,
okay.
Right there. So year after year, we would go up there. So yeah, we've got some pretty good suburban stories. We watched, we walked up, and we was walking through this lady's yard. It was way before daylight. She come out on the porch, and I mean, caught us like we had permission to hunt in her backyard, but I don't think she knew we was there. So we're like literally 10 yards from her front door. And we're getting ready to go around the house. We're thinking they're inside asleep. She comes out. She's fixing to go take her morning run. And there we are in full camo in front of the car. And we stop. And she pooped down both legs. I mean,
oh, I bet.
And I was like, oh, my gosh. I said, I'm so sorry. So, anyway, we scared her, but she gave us permission. And we went back. And then there was another time when we was hunting in the backyard. The lady didn't know we was there. And she was... we made a comment. We didn't put this on the show, but she was cooking breakfast naked, and we could see her through the window, you know, and we're only like 40, 45 yards away. She had no idea we were back there, and I'm thinking, like, who cooks bacon with it splattering and your butt naked? She was naked. Believe this, man.
Have you shared that story before?
Well,
I feel like I've heard that one before.
Well, yeah, I have. I have told that story.
I feel like I've heard it.
Yep. Another guy, Waddell shot a deer, died in the lady's back, I mean, guy's backyard. We go to retrieve it, and he comes out, and he goes, you know, he's an anti-hunter, so he's like, no, you can't go in our yard, you can't go in our yard. And we're like, come on, man. He goes, man, my wife is going to be upset. And we're like, just let it, look, we did it legally. Let us retrieve the deer. It's not like we broke the law. And he just felt the need to flex. And we noticed that there was a tree down in his yard and said, listen, let us get the deer up, and we'll get it out of here. We won't have no problems with your wife. The deer's dead. You don't want a deer just laying in your yard all day, you know. Let us get it up. Yeah. We'll come back and cut that tree up. Well, then when he seen that there was something in it for him, he let us come do it. So then we got the deer, took care of it, came back, and then we cut the tree up and unloaded it. So we got it all taken care of. So, yeah.
That's awesome. No. Maudell may have shared that story with us too, actually, now that I'm thinking about it.
I don't know. I don't remember that. It's cool, though.
That is cool. This is going to be a professional segue here. So we're getting into archery. Obviously, you're hunting these backyards with archery. You know, a lot of people that are hunting these suburban properties, they want their deer to die fast, and they want them deer to die efficient as best they can. There's one lethal broadhead that I used this year, the Mega Meat G5, which obviously you have a huge part in. Let's go ahead and talk about that thing, because and get into some of this archery talk, because that broadhead is just absolutely devastating.
Yeah, we've been real, real, real proud of it. I mean, the little brother, the Dead Meat, is segue to the Mega Meat, and either one is equally lethal. They're the same design. It's just one, you know, has a larger cut in diameter. But, you know, I've everything archery-wise, I've always, well, and not just archery, but, you know, I always have a pro and con effect to it. You know, so basically I write two categories, what's the pros, what's the cons. And before we even go down the road of folks thinking that we're just pumping up this broadhead, there are a lot of great broadheads on the market.
And at 100%.
At the end of the day, you just got to get it where it counts. You know, if you can get one to go completely through where it counts, there's going to be a lot of success with the broadheads. However, you got the human factor, and then you're shooting a live critter. You know, they're going to be ducking, they're going to be diving, they're going to be turning, they're going to be twisting. You know, the whole anatomy of it changes and stuff. So you got to put the odds in your favor. So if we're going down through there, I'm not a fan of a mechanical that goes in and has to fold back over itself. Not to say that there's been a lot of people that have killed a lot of critters with that style broadhead. However, I just think that you're going to have more failures on quarter shots. You're going to have more failures as far as hindering penetration, chances of it not opening. Whereas if you go with a rear deploying style broadhead, like your G5, your Rage, your Sever, you know, the Killzone, yep. You know, there's probably 4, 5, 6 that slide into place. It doesn't deter the path of the arrow so that you're going to get good penetration on it. It's going to fly. One thing I do like about the Dead Meat and the Mega Meat is it's really tight and it's really aerodynamic, so it's going to fly similar to your field point, you know, and it's going to be accurate for you. There's nothing more, you know, kills your confidence more than to shoot all summer long with field points and be really, really accurate, and then you go screw on a big fixed blade broadhead, and your groups go from this at 40 yards to this. Your confidence tanks because you're trying to sight those broadheads in. Whereas with if it's more aerodynamic, it's going to shoot a tighter group, and then your confidence is going to be high. And at the end of the day, no matter what broadhead you're shooting, no matter what bow, anything like that, accuracy always wins, period. You know, over penetration, weight, FOC, everything. Accuracy and pinpoint accuracy of where you get the arrow to go through is the number one thing. So with that broadhead, you know, a lot of your rear deploying or expandables are two blades. So let's just think about that. It advertises a 2-inch cut as a two blade. So, you know, I know we kind of made fun of the commercial way back when. It's a sliver instead of a chunk. But let's just do the numbers. It's physics, really. So if you've got a 2-inch cut, a 2-inch slice, which is not a circle, it's just a slice, and you got two blades that is doing massive hemorrhage damage as it's going down the blade, let's just incorporate one more blade. So we got three blades, and you've got three independent blades, which is a minimum of 33% more surface area to do more damage, more cutting, and it's going to be a hole to where you have three independent flaps to allow more blood loss. So it's 33% more cutting, and it's 30, and it's, I don't know the percentage, but if you've got two holes, the blood loss onto the ground, sure, which is better, sure, track, is better than the chances of a slice. Not to say that the slice won't kill it, because it's going to do it as well, but it doesn't allow, in some instances, depending on how it goes through that rib cage, the amount of blood loss onto the ground. But with all these things and it being all steel design and a really tight aerodynamic, I mean, if you're just checking off all the positives that that broadhead offers, it's really kind of self-explanatory for, I'm not going to say for every whitetail hunter, because, you know, I wouldn't recommend that for someone shooting 40 pounds, a kid or a woman, but they're not going to have the problems with accuracy and forgiveness as a guy who's shooting, you know, 280, 90, 300 feet per second would with a fixed blade broadhead. So we want to set them up to where it's a cut on contact, you know, type of a really sharp fixed blade or, you know, so that said, I'm talking the meat and potatoes of all hunters, you know, the guy that's from, you know, 26 and a half inch to 30 inch draw to, you know, pulling, you know, in the high 50s to, you know, 80 pounds. That's where a mechanical plate is used for. That's the guy that can get away with it. And shooting critters that are, you know, maybe up to elk size, but definitely mule deer size and smaller. That's who we're talking about. Sure. Meat and potatoes of most hunters and mostly whitetail hunters. It's been phenomenal. The feedback we've gotten over the last 2 years over the Mega Meet, and especially this year, and the sales, you know, speak for themselves. I think people are extremely happy. They offer it for a crossbow. So I feel like me and certainly, you know, Waddell, we all had a voice in it with design. I worked with, you know, Nate and a lot of the guys over at G5, and I'm not going to say I designed it by no means. I mean, I feel I had input and some testing and, you know, early input on it. But, I'm totally sold on it. I mean, I've thought so many times in tree stands and waking up and dreaming and just, I mean, like, that. It's just, I don't see where it can be bad. I just really don't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are a couple of things that I've noticed from using it. Like I said, I killed my deer this year with one for the first time. That was the first time I used that head. Prior to that, I used Rage and a Rage tripan. And like you said, they're if you get them in the right spot, they're going to kill regardless. But I think there's a few features on it that I like is that, let's say you... Two things mainly. The first one being really a really simple thing, but the retaining collar, the retention collar of those blades, you know, with like my Rages or other brands out there, how many times have you been going through and you catch your bow on a limb as you're pulling it up or you're doing something crazy and you break that retention collar and now you got a blade that's flapping? Well, these, they just kind of click back into place. And then on top of that, let's say it doesn't deploy. And I've heard you say this before, but if it doesn't deploy, well, guess what you have now? You have three blades in a 1-inch hole instead of the 2-inch. Now you have all three blades right there, and you're basically shooting a fixed blade broadhead at that point.
That's right. Meaning there is no failure. There is no thought of not doing damage. You know, it's going to do more massive. It has to open. I mean, it has to open. I've never seen one not opening, but if that's a hurdle someone has in their head, worst case scenario, if you welded that shut, if you super glued it shut, it's still going to have a 1-inch. The blades are 100% exposed. They're not stuck inside the ferrule. You know, half of it's not inside the ferrule. It's all exposed. Everything's out. Yeah, that's a good point. And then, you know, the spider clips from the first versions of that, which was the T3s, they had the spider retention clips, which was aggravating, and they had a little noise to them because they rattled. Well, this new the new blue lock collar that you mentioned is just about bulletproof, and they supply. Let's just say you wear one out, the extra ones that are already in there, so they're easy to replace. Yeah.
Yeah, it's super simple. Like, you know, if you're pulling your arrow out of your quiver, that's typically where I'm finding myself. You know, you're pulling your arrow out of your quiver, and if you tweak it just right, you know, that blade's popping out, and it's literally just clipping it back in. Or you're just pushing it back in. And then loading up and you're good to go. So I know you haven't messed with them yet though, have you?
No.
I mean, you've been with me with them, but I don't think you.
Yeah, I haven't used the Mega Meets yet. I use the M3s.
Yeah,
the G5 right. M3s.
Excellent head. Yeah, excellent head.
And we've gone so far too. You know, we've had like Troy Fowler and those guys on, and I know I kind of was going through a stage there. I still have all the equipment, but I was sharpening all my replacement blades, or all the mechanical blades, with what is that guy's name? Innovative Outdoorsman or something like that is on YouTube. He sells like a little 3D printed 33 degree angle, you know, getting the burr on him, getting the burr and making a mirror polish. And we've messed with that quite a bit, man. I'll tell you what, you'd popping those hairs right off of your skin on that. And I didn't know this, but the dead meat one, I don't know if I told you, the dead meat, it's a little smaller profile, because I never really truly understood what the difference was when we're trying to sell them, because we carry all these obviously in our store. And that dead meat, a little smaller cut, but I think I've heard you say it has a different type of sharper blade on it. Well, I think you may have said it earlier too.
Yeah, the 2022 version, it was the same. It was a MEM blade, just like it's on the Mega Meat, but the new version, the V2 is the sharp blade. It's the Lutz blade, which is on the Striker, and we have Lutz blades on the dead meat now. So you, which is the V2. Lutz blades that's on there. And really the only difference between a dead meat and a Mega Meat is it's a 3-blade 1.5 versus a 3-blade 2 with the Mega Meat.
I see, and that makes sense why last year I got this comment quite a bit from some people that were shopping, but a lot of people like that Striker that we sell. They're like, that thing is wicked sharp, and well, that explains why it's got a different blade system on it. So now it's cool to touch on that for sure.
Yeah, we always like to say that that Striker or the Lutz blades, they're so sharp that they'll cut you before God gets the news.
that's a Georgia reference for sure down there, but I love it.
Yeah.
You mentioned that commercial. You know, I was working here when that came out. It's probably been a few years now at this point. But that commercial, you know, having Outdoor Channel and seeing all the commercials on TV, and then you got T-Bone smacking some loins on the table and getting shot up with blood all over himself. How fun was it to record that Mega Meat commercial when you guys first announced it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Mega Meat commercial is, the one where I'm stacking the steaks up, is that's the dead meat. Now, the Mega Meat, when Michael and them got to splatter me with blood, I mean, and they white wall, and they got that behind my big old body there, so we went over all the features of it. But yeah, we filmed that here in Georgia at Realtree and the studios at Realtree. That was fun. I said, you better enjoy this, boys, when they splattered that blood on me. Because I said, that's about the one time you're only going to get a money shot on me.
Oh, I love it. I love that. Yeah, you know, when you're looking at commercials, you know, like I said before, as I start, I'm not that new. 2016 was my first like full, I'm going to go buy myself a bow and hunt by myself. And that was coming out right around that time frame as I was kind of getting introduced to it. Of course, you've seen it on Outdoor Channel or Sportsman's Channel. And it's like, it was definitely different than all the other ones that you see out there for sure.
Yeah, it got your attention.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it was their idea, and they said, are you okay with it? I said, yeah, I'm okay with it. I said, it's pretty in your face. I mean, but I'm okay with it. If y'all are, I'm glad to see that they, you know, didn't have any scruples about it and went ahead with it.
Yeah. You want to, you're the FOC guy in the table here, so you want to bring up some FOC stuff?
Or? Well, a while back in our conversation, you talked about shooting field points all summer long and then moving to your, you know, testing out shooting your broadheads and making sure that they're shooting right. I know that you teamed up with, was it Last Chance Archery, and you made some type of a broadhead tuning device?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, for years, I've been using, it's called an ABBA. It's actually a knock tuner, and you guys are too young to probably remember this, but years ago, like in the, you know, the 80s and the 90s, before we had Uninock system where the knock goes in the back of the shaft, you know, back when there was aluminum shafts, mainly that's all there was, is we have a swedge on the end. I'm sure you guys have seen it where the aluminum comes down, and then it's drawn down into a cone, and that's called a swedge or a swag. And, you know, a lot of the traditional, you know, like cedar and stuff or wood arrows, you know how they're drawn down and it's, you got a glue-on style knock that goes on there. Well, when you put a glue-on knock on, like if you shoot in tight groups, you bust a knock off and then you have to glue another knock on there. If you don't get that knock glued on there exactly straight, from a tournament aspect, it pushes the arrow, you know, you want it pushing perfectly. So this company called ABBA, this was years ago, 25 years ago or more, they developed this thing where you stick the knock in there, it's an arrow straightener, and you can make sure that you have that knock exactly aligned in there. Well, this is long before mechanical broadheads. So it would always frustrate me. So every year during the summer, I'd shoot my field points, and I was a tournament archer, so I knew, you know, I felt like I knew how good I should shoot, and my confidence is high. I got my bow hunting bow, and then I, just like so many of us, we take six broadheads. You know, you take your six muzzies or your six thunderheads. G5 wasn't even a blip on the radar now. I screw them in, and you go out there and shoot, and all of a sudden, it's all I can do to hit a pie plate at 30 yards every time. Confidence is shot. I'm like, oh my gosh, I mean, there's no way I can shoot at a deer like this. And we would always take and spin your arrows. If you've got fixed blade broadheads, you know, it's just something we do. You spin it on a table, spin it on your hand, and you can feel the wobble in there. And, you know, with aluminum arrows, what we would always do is we'd heat it up because the inserts on aluminum arrows are glued in with hot melt most of the time. But with carbon, you know, you can't heat that up, you know, because you'll just damage the carbon. So we would rotate it until we had that broadhead indexed. I like to use the word indexed because the indexed is making sure that every broadhead is not necessarily aligned with the veins, but every arrow that you have with a broadhead is a clone of each other, just so that they're all aligned because, you know, it's physics. It's aerodynamics. The broadhead has to pass, the air has to pass through the broadhead and then pass through the veins the same. It's just easier to line them up with the veins, so we line them up with the veins. Indexing. And then tuning is to make sure that it spins true, because if that fixed blade broadhead is on there and it's crooked a little bit, and that thing, that's what's cutting the air as you're going down through there, imagine having a plane and then the nose of the plane was offset. And as it flies through the air, it's just going to want to knuckleball and go left or right. So I realized that we need to make sure that was straight. But how do you do that? And it's a problem. It's either the shaft is bent, which, again, this is aluminum arrows. This is pre-carbon. It's either the shaft. It's either the insert, which we all know inserts are made a dime a dozen. They're, you know, what comes with arrows is not really quality stuff. They're spit out, and then you have ferrule of the broadhead. You know, if it's not machined right or if it's not stamped right, it could be crooked. And then you have glue tolerance. The amount of glue that is surrounded by the insert and it going in the shaft, if those tolerances are off, that glue's filling the void and it causes it to be off. So those four things could be off. So with this tuner, I can plug the broadhead into where I would normally tune the nock on this ABBA tuner. I plug it in there, and then I put the dial indicator right over the top of the insert, and then I can spin it, and I can see how far off the straightness of the broadhead, that whole system is. And then what you can do is heat it up, not carbon, aluminum. You could heat it up, and I could tune it to where it was perfectly straight. Spin it, and they all spin perfectly. Because how many times have you ever, I'm speaking to a lot of the old school guys, if you put fixed blade broadheads on you screw them on there, and you go shoot, and two of them hit really good, but then four of them don't hit where they're supposed to. Usually the two are always going to spin good. So you always have like, oh, that's my number one arrow, this is my number two arrow, this one don't hit very good. And then you're handcuffed as to how can I get more accurate. Well, by tuning it, I could have a guy come into my shop, and I said, I can promise you I can take these broadheads, I can align them, index them, and I would charge like $2 a shaft to take his broadheads, I would index them, and I would tune them. And I said, I can promise you I can cut your groups in half. No ifs, ands, or buts. Even to this day, I can. And that brought so many people into our store, Hey, man, would you tune my broadheads? And think about that confidence-wise. I would gladly pay, as a consumer, $2 per shaft to make sure that my fixed-blade broadheads are going to hit. So the reason why mechanical broadheads are so popular and became so popular is because of that problem we were having.
Yep.
They're not as accurate. And then plus, another selling point is when it does get there, you got a lot bigger hole. Instead of having an inch and an eighth cut or an inch and 3/16 like most fixed-blade broadheads are, you got a 2-inch cut now, or you got a 2.5-inch cut. So I can sell you on aerodynamics, and then I can sell you on a bigger hole. Well, that's why mechanical sells so well. Exactly. And then that's when the war started. I'm not so many people came out with them. But nonetheless, there's a lot of guys out there that like shooting a fixed blade broadhead, and I've got no problem with that at all. But if you're going to shoot a fixed blade broadhead or any broadhead, I even tune my mechanicals because, once again, accuracy wins. I can shoot accurate with my mechanicals, but if I tune them all and make sure they're aligned because it's aerodynamics, I can really make them shoot good. So with this tool that we came out with, it's called the Revolution. I showed them, this is the perfect company to show it to. I've known Leon Pittman and that family for a long time. They're based here in Georgia. I presented this, my idea to build a broadhead tuner, Muzzy, to NAP, to G5 years ago. I mean, like 15, 20 years ago. And although they agreed on it, think about it. It doesn't make sense for a broadhead manufacturer to come out with this, because if you're trying to sell this as a broadhead manufacturer, say, here, we got a broadhead aligner. It's like, why am I going to buy a Muzzy broadhead when you're selling a broadhead tuner? That shows me that your broadheads are not good. It meaning it would be almost a black eye for them to sell that. You know, it's like alienates them. It's like our broadheads are good enough on their own. You got to. But for a manufacturer that doesn't have a skin in the game, like Last Chance Archery, it's perfect for them, because they don't sell broadheads. So now it works for everybody. And we wanted it to do way more than that. So I see you got their arrow squaring device there on the table.
Yeah.
So this Revolution arrow tuner, it actually squares the end of the shaft. It actually is a broadhead. It is an arrow straightener. It is an arrow checker, and it is a broadhead aligner, so that you can put your broadhead in there and you can align it. So what you're doing is, with carbon, now that carbon is, you know, the king, is you're actually, I'm not sure if it's going to be the insert. It could be the glue tolerance. It could be the ferrule. But more than likely, whatever you're doing to it nowadays, you're bending that ferrule just ever so slightly. However, that's okay. You're bending it to where it's perfectly aligned with the shaft. And it tightens your groups up like nobody's business. I highly recommend it, especially if you're a fixed blade shooter. And from a store standpoint, like you guys have one at every store, that's how you're selling it to a shop. Because it's not cheap. It's, you know, $500 retail-wise. So it's for the guy that's the guru. You know, it doesn't make sense for a guy that only has six broadheads. But if every shop had one, it's something to get people to come back in and say, hey, man, I need these broadheads tuned. But usually, my guy's only going to go through 3 to 6 broadheads a year anyway. He can have his broadheads tuned, and then his hunting arrows are ready. So $2 a shaft, for peace of mind, it's almost like bore sight in a rifle. You know, you're getting that.
Oh, for sure.
So you know that your system is correct. You've indexed them. You've let the shop index them, and it gets repeat customers, meaning like, hey, I've shot this a couple of times. Will you mind throwing this on the arrow tuner, the broadhead tuner, and check this? And $2, it gets you repeat customers. It'll pay for itself in no time, absolutely pay for itself in no time. So we're really proud of it. It sold real well. The independent retailer has embraced it. It's working real good for them, as well as the guru. So it does more than just broadhead tune. It knock tunes. I mean, there's so many things that it does. It's got a built-in a broadhead wrench, and we're actually building an adapter now so that it'll work on 2-blade broadheads, because it'll work on 3 and 4 and multiple, but sometimes, like your cut-on-contact 2-blade, you know, single bevel and stuff, it has a hard time with. You can still do it, but we're building an adapter so it works real good for them as well. But, yeah, we're super proud of it.
So I need Brandon Rose to listen to this. I need my wife to listen to this so I can put one in the basement.
Yeah.
In my dojo.
Dojo.
We're kind of on the single broadhead conversation now, and building adult arrows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what, you know, we had Mr. Fowler on. Heck, Ben, I don't even know how long ago that was. It was last year.
It was a while.
Yeah, and so we talked about adult arrows with him and, you know, an FOC and just building a stick that is flying true and flying right and paying respect to the animal that you're sending it at. But if you can, kind of, I know you're not shooting 800 grain arrows, but at the same time, I do know that you have you do care about FOC in some regard. If you can kind of give us an idea where you are. I'm gonna use air quotes, cause it's not really a trend, but it seems to be a lot more popular now in the world of social media, but kind of where are you with heavy arrows and high FOC and the adult arrows and all that stuff?
Yeah, I'm I've been a fan of and a higher FOC for a long time, long before it was cool, I guess you could say, and popular. So I've been on that bandwagon for quite some time. I mean, I had my local machine shop back in the day. My favorite arrow for years and years and years was the ACC, aluminum core. I personally believe that aluminum is the perfect, it is the most consistent 360-degree spined arrow that there are. Now, granted, they're not tough. They're not tough like a carbon arrow.
Yeah,
so, and
sure.
I get why we don't shoot them anymore. But the aluminum core with a carbon outside, the ACC was an ultimate arrow to shoot. And I would have my local machine shop build me custom inserts because there was no choice in getting heavier inserts back, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, sure.
So I would build the heavier inserts to boost that up because way back in the day in the 90s and stuff, we had a lot of different broadhead choices to choose heavier. You know, you could get a lot of different, you know, like Thunderhead, Muzzy, they all made 150-grain broadheads. But we all know now 100-grain is the you know, there's very few other ones other than 100, number one. And the beauty of it is we can boost that FOC with heavier inserts. And you have great companies now like you know, Iron Wheel, Day Six, and I'm a big fan of the Ethix component system.
Yeah, because, I will say Ethix.
Yeah, Ethix is awesome, man, because it helps the structural integrity. It enables you to have a longer shaft in your insert, and then you cap over it for structural integrity with the outsert, the steel, stainless steel outsert. So you're doing lots of things. You're beefing your arrow up, and that goes back. I knew there was another point that I was wanting to make when we was talking about lining everything, and manufacturers, when they sell a complete set of arrows, they got this 15-cent insert in there. And let's just think about that. The arrow and the broadhead is so important, meaning like as soon as you've done all this preparation and as soon as you cut the arrow loose, you know, the burden is off of you. It's all on the arrow. And then the number one thing that's going to get you that critter is that arrow staying together. And the weakest point of that whole thing is where that broadhead screws into the arrow and the carbon shaft. So why would you rely on a 15-cent poorly made aluminum insert to hold all that together? To, you know, you got a broadhead that you paid $15 for one broadhead, $15 to $20 for one broadhead. The broadhead's more than the arrow. And then you're going to rely on a 15-cent insert to keep that on plane to where it's going to penetrate the way you want it to. We have to spend more money on our components. And fortunately, there's companies out there that will do that. And Ethix is one that I've been working with that really, I mean, it's really tight tolerances. It helps the static spine of the arrow, and it big time helps the structural integrity because of the caps over there. So highly recommend to folks spend a little extra money and get some quality components.
Even from our perspective too, as a retailer, I mean, obviously we have all these arrows with those packages in them, and a lot of our clientele is 20 yards to the corn pile. You know, they just want to cut the front of it off and slap a broadhead on of their choice. But here recently, Easton has started to carry more match grade components. So they got more match grade field points. They have more match grade. Now they have a match grade stainless steel insert that we're providing our customers as well as getting into that realm too. Easton's got the bronze line now, or not bronze, brass. The brass inserts now. They're a little bit better quality as well. So you can start. They're starting to. I feel like maybe the archery industry is really starting to get into that and seeing the demand of it and kind of answering that call, if you will.
Oh, certainly, yeah, because, you know, I was working with Easton way back then, and I was, you know, telling them, like, well, we got to get heavier inserts, and that they started using the brass inserts more and more, or at least, you know, the a lot of the shops didn't stock it, but at least they offered it, and you could order it direct, and or you could have your shop special order it from Easton. So at least 15 years ago, they started that, and then, you know, Gold Tip's done a fantastic job of offering a bunch of different types of inserts and ways to weight it up. And then, you know, Sirius Archer, which is more of a boutique type archer, that they offer the great components. And then now you've got just component manufacturers that are doing fantastic. But that all helps the FOC. And to answer your question about the FOC, meaning, you know, Dr. Ashby did all these studies and with the Ashby Foundation. And I was fortunate enough to, you know, meet him. He came to my store a couple of times. He's good friends with some friends of ours that live in the next town over. So every time he would come to visit, he'd come to my store, and we'd sit and have some fantastic conversations and stuff. And I respect so much of what he said because it wasn't influenced by dollars or anything. It was just purely how well, you know, the components worked. But now we have to – evolution's come. You know, we're 25 years down the line. He did a lot of his testing with which it doesn't really matter. Penetration is penetration. He did a lot of his testing with recurves and longbows, and he's shooting a Cape Buffalo. But we got to, in comparison, you know, again, we're breaking it down into pros and cons, meaning like really kind of overkill, in my opinion, to shoot an 800 grain arrow at a whitetail, you know, with 70 pounds when, yes, it's going to penetrate. No one's ever going to doubt that it's going to penetrate. And single bevel is by far the best penetrating broadhead that there is. It does more damage. It's actually, I call it an oyster shucker. Once it hits that bone,
yep.
It pops it and allows the arrow to go on through so that there's no tension on the arrow as it goes through the ribs and or whatever bone that you're trying to hit, you're going through. But you get so slow, you know, if you're just shooting 20 yards, that's okay, but there's so much more to archery than just slinging a spear. You know, there's a window, in my opinion, like about 255 to 290 feet per second seems to be the sweet spot, in my opinion, as far as a good killing. If you're shooting something that's 10 years, a 10-year-old bow or newer, and you're a guy that's the meat and potatoes, like we talked about, 27-inch draw to 30-inch draw. Naturally, if you're a, you know, Levi Morgan or a Tim Gillingham, that's 32-inch draw, you're going to be able to generate a lot of kinetic energy, sure. And those things are not as important. But the meat and potatoes, we all know, is, you know, 27 to 30-inch draw. So there's something to be said to be able to see the cast of your arrow, the trajectory of it, you know, the confidence of, you know, hey, my arrow doesn't fall out once it gets past 40 yards. We're never probably ever, you know, we seldom anybody shoots a deer over 40 yards. I mean, I'm not saying it don't, but it's a small percentage. But you want to be able to shoot with, you know, shoot out to 80 or 90 yards. You want to be able to have that trajectory to where it helps you with yardage estimations. You don't want to shoot 320 foot a second because then the bow becomes unforgiving. The broadhead flight becomes unforgiving. But there's a happy medium with everything. And I think you can do that, you know, if we're talking about the guy who's shooting, you know, elk, definitely mule deer and less. I think, you know, a number to try to strive for, but it doesn't have to be exactly, is that 500 to 550 grain. I think that's a good number to strive for. Now, if you fall short at 468 and that arrow is accurate, again, I go back to accuracy always wins because there's going to be something in there that works extremely well for you. But my numbers are, you know, 450 to 550. If you're under 450, there's some things that you're going to suffer about. Will you kill every deer you shoot at? Very much, potentially so. And then to go back to that, like FOC-wise, I like to, the numbers I try to achieve is 15% to about 20%. That's what I like to choose. What you run into once you go over 20% is you end up breaking the spine of the arrow down so much because you put so much weight up front that it's hard to find an arrow stiff enough to handle more than that. You know, it really has to be a super-duper special, you know, 100-spine, 150-spine arrow to handle that. So with what we have to offer in the masses as far as like a 200, 300, 350-spined arrow, you can achieve that 15 to 20%. It gives you in my opinion, it gives you the optimum in wind. It gives you the optimum in forgiveness, penetration, mass weight, all that. You can achieve it pretty easy in that 15 to 20%, so to speak. Now, a lot of people talk about, and I think Troy does as well, you know, everybody talks about that shoulder, okay? You know, and like,
yeah.
Hit that shoulder, and what if you hit that? No matter what you're shooting, whether it's a single bevel or whether it's a mechanical, if you hit that, you know, the way the anatomy is on a pig or deer, you've kind of made a bad shot anyway. I mean, that's a bad shot. And now, granted, we're human, and we're shooting at a live critter. That's going to happen. But equally so, let's talk about this. Like, if you hit over there, you're in trouble anyway because there's not a lot of vitals behind that anyway.
There isn't, yeah.
Yeah, the most of the meat and potatoes is here. But if we got the vitals here and we're having to deal with the leg and the scapula and stuff, you're going to have problems penetrating that anyway. Here's where you want to be. But equally so, what if you hit over here, way over here into
the gut? Yep.
I would feel better knowing that I had a 2-inch 3-blade cut going through the guts, the back of the liver, that's going to put that deer down way quicker than a 1-inch single bevel or a 1-inch single bevel blade through the guts is going to be a longer, slower death, and he's going to travel a lot farther, if that makes sense. Meaning, like, there's a saying that there's a lot of advantage to that 3-blade, to that massive cut going through the guts, because you can equally hit back there as just as much as you can hitting the scapula. But I, you know, again, accuracy always wins. Now, just because you shot accurate, because we're humans and we're shooting at a live animal, doesn't always mean the critter's where you was accurately going to be. But when everything works right, accuracy always is going to win, and you want the forgiveness and accuracy to be on your side to put the arrow where it needs to be. That's the number one thing to strive for. However, things happen. You hit a twig, you hit it. If you hit the scapula, just know that if you've built a good structurally integrity, solid arrow, as well as something that's going to cut well, you're going to have just as much success as building something that's going to go through a brick wall. You know, you got to have some, but you got to be able to check off a lot of boxes, not just like, hey, I'm going to throw a spear at it. You know, I'm not saying that it won't penetrate. Nobody ever argues that point. But there are other things that are equally, or if not more so, important as well.
Well, that's what you said. It's all about balancing the pros and cons. And it's funny, I'm glad that you said that, because I had this question down, because I knew it was going to kind of fit in the flow of things. But we actually talked about that with Troy, too. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned, hey, okay, yeah, the single bevel is going to be great here. On the opposite side, and he agreed, on the opposite side, you know, a mechanical is going to give you the advantages on the backside, right? You got the shoulder side for the fix. You got the backside kind of for the mechanical side. It's going to help you. And with knowing that you're probably going to talk about that, we actually have a show sponsor through hunting season. He's a taxidermist here. He's done some stuff for us, and he also recovers deer up in Utica, just north of Newark. And Toby, and I actually talked to him this morning, so he's recovered probably, what would you say? It's in the hundreds,
yeah,
for sure.
From
all over, you know, mm-hmm. Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, you know, PA, Michigan. He said about 60% of the deer that he recovered this year that had to, you know, that he got called on were gut shots. So think about that. 60%, you know, those guys know that they need to call him right away because they've seen it hit the gut, or they know that they have a gut shot. And so they know that they're going to want to let the animal lie down. It's going to take a longer time to die. And typically anything that's been hitting the shoulder, he told me it's probably a mile. I mean, it's if I do find it, it's not going to – if it does bleed, you know they'll track it. But then typically what they're going to do is muddy it up. My dog's not going to be able to smell it or have a harder time smelling it. Like you said, though, it's a pro versus con thing. It's what do you want to take – I think Troy's point was I'm building plan B arrows, right? And the whole idea is building plan B arrows. So I think the only thing that you really differ on between him and yourself, Travis, is – just what type of cutting object you want to use, you know, whether it's a mechanical or the fix.
Yeah, he even fell in the same range with you on the weight, too. It was his sweet spot was like 425 to 500 around that area. So.
Yeah, there was a curve, right? They had him in, they had like a curve where it started diminishing quality, yeah. Right? It was the momentum versus like penetration, right? We can go back and look at it, but it was like the curve right there in that sweet spot was in that 500 range, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I like right now my current arrow is 509. But, you know, like people, I get asked, I mean, whether it's social media, emails or whatever, you know, what do you think about this and this certain arrow? It's not like there's a certain weight. That's the great thing about archery. There's just so many different mousetraps and there's so many different things. I'm never going to be that guy. I'm always learning. I mean, I've been doing this
for sure.
I'm always learning and I've had bow setups that shot 345 feet per second, and I've had bow set hunting setups that's, you know, 235 or 240. So, you know, at the end of the day, I don't want to say I love this slogan that a slow hit is better than a fast miss. So, this is one thing I would love to bring up on y'all's podcast. Something that I would love to see changed. As we talked about, you know, I'm not anti any type of broadhead. I'm a pro and con type of approach. But one thing I'd like to do is I would love for there be a movement. Like, it seems like we've gotten good traction with FOC, and we all know the benefits of that, you know, through forgiveness and in the wind and in penetration and structural integrity, because you got more weight up there. There's just so many pros there. So we're trending good there on FOC, higher FOC, not extreme FOC. That works well for Dr. Ashby and Kate Buffalo. If you're going over there, yeah, you do need to jump on that bandwagon. You do need to shoot a 1,200 grain arrow. You do. But shooting through a Kate Buffalo is like trying to shoot through a, you know, a oak flooring. I mean, but what I'd like to jump on the bandwagon, and I've said this on a several other podcasts, and I think I'm going to stir the pot a little bit more, is you guys owning a shop, think about this. A customer comes in. This makes your job or our job, because I like to classify myself as a retail salesperson or a retail shop, because that's where, you know, that's my heart and soul, and that's where I started. Guy comes in, been reading the ad. He looks at this Matthews ad or this Hoyt ad, and it says, hey, I think I want this VTM right here, 340 feet a second. You know, I've been reading up. He's been studying. It's even worse now than it was 20 years ago, because we got so much on the Internet, you know. So everybody's got an education. He comes in. They say, okay, we'll get you set up with that. So then the shop owner rigs it all up. You rig the string. You get him set up with a good hunting arrow, you know, say 475 grain arrow, you know, and get him set up. You go back there and he, you know, pop it through the paper, get him tuned. Get
270.
Him, yeah, and you pop through there and it's 5270. That guy just got gut punched. That madder than fire. How many times have we, as working in the shop, have got to talk him off a cliff, like saying, bud, it makes our job hard, man, because you got the manufacturer's done throwed a number out here, and that guy is like, you have lied to me, or what have you done to my bow, or why can't I shoot 350 feet per second that the bow said it was going to shoot? Now, granted, this is where they come up with that number. It's an IBO legal, which is, we all know, 350 grain arrow, 70 pounds at 30-inch draw, which nobody shoots a 350 grain arrow no more. I mean, maybe tournaments, that's it. Yeah. And why is the IBO, which is considered the International Bow Hunting Organization, why are they throwing these numbers? So let's back that up. So 70 pounds, which is, that's, I'd say 65 is probably more common, but, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
70. But nobody's shooting 30-inch draw, actually. In my opinion, I think a 28 to 29 is the average. Wouldn't y'all say 28 and a half?
Yeah, I'm 28 and a half. So, yeah, I mean, that's.
I'm 29 and a half. Yeah.
So.
And that's what I would say is the normal. Very few people are shooting 30. So I would wish that we could come up with a standard. It would help bow sales. It would make our job as an independent retailer easier, to where when the consumer has done all his research, but now, like that is the standard, the IBO legal. It shoots 340. That's almost like saying, yeah, like if you buy this Corvette, you can do a quarter mile in 2.2 seconds. How are you ever going to prove that? And like if you go out there and say, look, I'll buy it. If it'll do 2.2, I'll buy it. Well, that's not going to happen. That's not threw out there. We need to come up with something that's like, okay, at 29-inch draw or 28.5-inch draw at, say, 65 pounds, shooting a 475 grain arrow. That's the new norm. That should be what all bows are tested at. That way it makes it easier. The consumer's going to be happier. He's going to have a better experience in archery. It's going to make it easier for the independent retailer or the guy to the pro shop to set the bow up for him, and it's just going to be a happier experience. That guy goes home, he's like, dude, I just spent $2,300, and this bow is shooting 35, 40 feet per second, less than what they say on that piece of paper or on their website.
Yeah, yeah, and that's something, and I don't remember what bow that we did it when we started making the switch on that. So we would get these bows coming in, and Ben and I were doing all the videos for that, and so we'd go through, and you know, most of them are coming in at, I think most of our bows are coming in at 29 and 70 for the most part. So I'll give that half inch and just go shoot it. I won't set it up any different. And we've started to incorporate that with the
we got the speed, a chrono.
The
and
chrono,
everything.
Yeah. Yep. So we got the chrono. We're like, okay, this is the advertised speed. My arrow is weighing 460, I think, with the, just 100 standard 5mm access, cut at 28 inch or 27 inches, you know, 100 grain tip. Normal head, like it's a 460 grain arrow. We weigh them all, show people what our arrows are weighing, and then we shot through the chrono and actually showed people. And I that was something that kind of bugs me a little bit too, because realistically, you're never going to get 340 feet per second or 350 feet per second. But
excuse me, but we wanted people to see, without giving our personal opinion, these are the facts. This is what we've shot through this chrono, and just give people a more of a realistic idea.
Want to manage their expectation and what they're getting into when they come in to buy a bow, just basically like what you were just talking about.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is you shouldn't have to do that. You're basically pre-selling or letting people know, and being as there's so much marketing out there against what you just done, it kind of makes your job, or not just your job, everybody's job harder, because you got to, like, man, I'm going to have to be a shoulder to cry on as soon as this guy shoots it through the meter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm looking at, like, guys like MFJJ and Podium Archer, you know, all the guys down, what's, like Corbin's down in Texas and stuff, and all these guys are on YouTube doing these bow reviews and building these bows for people. And you know, the guys over there at the bow rack in Oregon and stuff, you see them on YouTube all the time. They're like, okay, we got to shoot it through, give our customers a more realistic idea of what it is.
Yeah,
for sure, man. Yeah, for sure. I did have one question. So that same guy, and we'll get back on this, and then we'll get back into the archery build. I want to make sure I had this question. You've been able to hunt a lot, and a lot of probably different places all over the country, whether it's Kansas, Ohio, Georgia, you know, you name it, right? Going to the shoulder question, he gets, when he's doing these recoveries, Toby, our whitetail recovery guy and sponsor of the show, he was telling me that a lot of guys that he gets, and clients from Michigan or New York or West Virginia, Pennsylvania, these mountain hill, big timber kind of country, not a lot of ag, not in terms of ag, but not in the terms of like Iowa, Kansas, Ohio, Indiana ag. Do you think, in your hunting experience, not all scapulas and shoulders are created equally, right? And so these guys are thinking, well, I would have blown through that shoulder on deer in West Virginia, no problem. But when I come to Ohio, the same guys that are shooting deer in the shoulder in West Virginia are getting stuck because these deer, in his opinion, they're corn-fed, they got better environment, they got better management practices. You know, you're not like in, you know, no offense to Tennessee, but you're not taking 2-3 bucks off the landscape. You know, you're getting your one and you're done. Have you seen any of that, or do you have an opinion on like how deer are different across the country versus the success rate that people have against them?
Absolutely, and the reason why, it's just not the bone structure, it's just the size of the animal. Like, example, like the deer that we kill here in Georgia, you know, if you get one that field dresses, you know, over 200 pounds, that's huge. I mean, that's a big deer here. Whereas, like in Kansas, my biggest buck that I've killed out there, weight-wise, was 317. And it's not just the bone. Well, the bone's going to be bigger. That's a given, because you have subspecies of the white-tailed deer, but the hide's going to be thicker. If he has to grow up in Saskatchewan, where it's cold, and Ohio versus Florida, as well as the meat and the you know, another thing, if you studied Dr. Ashby's report, is he wouldn't test anything once it got 30, they would kill animals or cows or whatever, and then they tested for 30 minutes, and that's it, because the coagulation was not the same. So many people do penetration tests. I'm bouncing around, guys. I know I'm a thing in there. But like, you see so many people use ballistic gel on broadhead tests on YouTube and such, and they shoot through stuff like that. Don't get me wrong, that does show it shows you how tough some things are, but to be a real world or a to shoot in an animal, it's not the same. It's understood that you're going to break a blade if you're going through some board or something like that. That's just going to happen. I would like to see, if you're going to compare a broadhead test, is to take like a double up a thick terry cloth towel or a piece of carpet and wrap it around a watermelon. That's more real, because the inside of a animal is just lubrication. It's just, you know, hollow and such. Once you break through the barrier of the bone, you know, maybe have some paneling and then put a layer of carpet, shoot through the carpet, shoot through the paneling, through the watermelon. That's more real life type things. But yes, to answer your question, the muscle structure, the coagulation, you know, all of those things having a factor, just like muscle I guess if it's dried muscle and not lubricated, it could have a little friction on that as well. So, you know, 120 pounds more mass, and if you got bigger bone structure, yeah, it's certainly going to be harder. And I've noticed that. I mean, like, some of them deer come walking in there, and I'm looking for saddle marks on them out in Kansas and some of these
Somebody's cow. You know, the next time you're out in Kansas, especially now that you got your leg, you need to hook up with old JJ and Waddell and hunt out all that apartment complex that he's got out there over that food plot.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Don't it sound great? Yeah.
That sounds perfect.
We'll have you, let's get into some of the arrow components, you know. I know we like to build them. In terms of, Ben and I are going to be different than our average customer because, like I said, we are getting in a little bit deeper into the weeds. But let's say I'm just John Smith. I'm starting to kind of build a little bit of an interest on building the right arrow. I'm over the 20 yards to the corn pile kind of set up. You know, I've listened to the T-Bones. I've listened to the Crispies and the Dudleys and all the people across the country that are giving me some information. When I'm going into a shop, what are some key things? You know, I got the one right here in front of me I think is the most important. But what are some of the key things the customer can do if they're starting to get in this or dipping their toe into that arrow building black hole that we're all a part of? You know, what can they do to kind of better their odds of success just from a elementary level?
On an elementary level, well, like we had talked about when we first started, to me, you know, archery is more than just bending a string. And, you know, to the guy who's graduating, you're going to want to start doing some of this stuff on your own because it adds to, I like to refer to the pride factor, meaning like you talk about therapy of fletching your own arrow, building your arrow. There is a therapy about that, meaning like if you just built the projectile, almost like a guy who shoots rifles, it's like, okay, I'm going to take you to the next level. I'm going to start reloading. So that's basically where you're at with archery, you know. Granted, not everybody can have a press, and you may need to have, you know, help with tuning and stuff like that. But, as you know, the next step, I would say, from an elementary person, rather than just grabbing six arrows out of their pre-made and having them made up, if you want to go to the next level as a consumer, I would recommend getting into building your arrows. By all means, refer to the pro at the pro shop as to recommending what components. Buying the components, taking them home, and you assemble them, because there's a pride factor and it helps with the confidence in knowing that, you know what, I just fletched this arrow. I just cut this arrow. I just shaved it down. I made it, I indexed it. I made this arrow that I'm fixing to send through this bow that I pulled back with my muscles. It's flown through the air accurately, and it's hit a critter that I've worked so hard to put in front of me at 20 yards. I mean, is there anything more rewarding than that?
There's not.
And then each year you do more and more and more. So, what I would recommend, but it's really endless, to be honest with you guys. Something that we're doing at Last Chance, I'll let you guys know. A lot of people talk about spine. So, if you want to, I'll go down that rabbit hole with spine on with you and what we're learning and what I've been doing and what we've been working with. So many people, you test spine with, You test the spine of the arrow of how stiff it is to handle the energy stored from the bow. And, you know, in my opinion, some people may argue with me, but for a guy that shoots a release and shoots a drop-away rest or shoot-through style rest, I don't think there's such a thing as too stiff of an arrow, but I do think that there's a major problem with too weak. We all know that too weak of an arrow, not handling the energy stored in the bow, you're going to have tuning issues. But too stiff, in my opinion, once it's absorbing the energy, is there's not a problem with too stiff. Now, granted, we plan with that whenever we do with the FOC. Spine, you know, you guys have a spine tester? Do y'all measure spine?
I haven't. No, that's one bridge I haven't crossed yet.
So you have a span of 28 inches, and then I forget the exact amount. I think it's 2 ounces. You put a 2-ounce weight in the center of the span. And how much it deflects tells you how stiff it is. Back in the day, when we shot aluminum so much, we would, in aluminum shaft, you have a seam. And what we would do is you plug the ends of the shaft and you put them in a bathtub. and you float them to where the seam goes down. So then you index them so that you're fletching all of your aluminum shafts to where the seam is in the exact same place so that you're going to get the amount of flex. Now, whoever's listening to this right now, what we're talking about, I am deep diving into some spine talking.
Yeah.
And most all of us cannot shoot the difference in it. So don't freak out on this. This is for the guy that, like myself, I'm a self-proclaimed anal arrow builder. I just want to leave everything to me, not the stuff. I want to check everything off the list. So what we're building is last chance is we're building a spine tester. There are spine testers out there that you can measure the deflection. But early on, whenever I was shooting carbon shafts, this was in early 90s. This was Beeman was the first one. And this is when they were, this is before Easton bought Beeman. They were from France. They're extruded. They weren't woven. And I felt like we were shooting those arrows, and I would shoot good groups when they'd begin. And then after I shot, let's just say I put 1,000 shots on them, I felt like the groups were opening up. And I can't help but back then I couldn't put my finger on it, but in my mind I felt like this carbon is just like a fishing rod. I'm breaking the spine. I didn't have a way of testing it back then, but I knew for a fact like I could get a fresh dozen of the same arrow and they would go back. So my spine was forever changed. Now, granted, that's not a problem these days per se because we have a lot better carbon. It's 30 years later. We got woven technology. We got cross weave. We've got layered, it's not an extruded. That was poorly first prototype-type carbon arrows back then. So the carbon arrows are a lot better now. However, how many times have you ever looked down in a carbon shaft and seen that one side of the wall thickness was thicker on one side than the other? Well, that tells you that the inside diameter is not consistent 360 degrees. And nobody talks about this, arrow manufacturers or anything. But if you've got a spine tester, which I have a spine tester, and I've been doing this, however, we're going to make one. We're making one now for the masses, to where you put the. I'm talking with my hands, but y'all can't see them.
Yeah.
The arrow at a 28-inch span, and then you got a dial indicator, and you have a weight there.
Yep.
So you're going to be able to measure the spine 360 degrees. So when someone tells you that they're knock tuning, you've heard of knock tuning, correct? Like when you get back and you shoot and it's like your one arrow is just hitting off. You know, it's like the number four arrow always hits to the right.
Yep.
So what you do is what we do now or what most folks do is you bring that arrow back and you take the knock and you turn it 120 degrees, rotate it to the next vein in line. And then you've got three choices if it's already pre-fletched. Otherwise, you shoot it or you align it, spine align it with the knock and fletch them all. Well, the way people have been spine aligning now, have you seen where people take and put weight on it? You know, like you crush it with
like
like
pressure?
Yeah.
Or kind of deflect it a little bit?
I don't agree with that at all.
I've seen that.
I mean, I guess it's better than not doing it, but that is very inconsistent. So you want your thing spine aligned, but let's just say you don't spine align it. You've got an arrow that is spined at 340 spine, and then you shoot – and you got one or two flyers. They all group good, but you got one or two flyers. Then you tune the knock. What you're doing when you're knock tuning, people call it knock tuning, but what you're doing is you're really spine aligning. You're bringing that spine align to where it's more equal to your group of arrows that are grouping, and you bring it back into play, and you try to get it as close to all spine aligned. But what we're coming up with, and I can do it with the one that I have now, it's going to be much better than this. This is makeshift what we got, is you take and spin the arrow with the weight on there and you can see the deflection so that you can always pick where the high side is and where the low side is, because it's inevitable that all carbon shafts are nowhere near. I mean, I can put aluminums on there and they spin just perfect, man. I mean, to this day, I know people don't want to hear this, but aluminum arrows are so superior in their spine and they shoot so well. They're just not tough at all. I mean,
do you think people should like look into like FMJs and things like that? Like where they still have that carbon over aluminum.
Or what about the SS technology the Victory does, like the stainless weave on the inside?
Well, I haven't got to test one of those yet, and I really would love to, but it is a stainless weave, but I don't know.
Yeah.
There's so much carbon incorporated in it, I don't know how that would work. Now, the FMJs do tune consistent. However, you got carbon impregnated inside of it, and sometimes carbon is not the same all the way around. So the aluminum part is stiff, so it's going to give you good readings. But the inside may change.
Sense, odd. Makes sense. That makes sense.
But the thing I don't like about FMJ, which it's a cool name, it's a good-looking arrow, and I love the aluminum incorporation. But the thing I don't like about FMJ is they are so heavy, grains per inch, it makes it impossible to manipulate your FOC like you'd really like to without having an arrow that is, you know, way heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's
makes sense.
FMJ. I mean, I don't mean to poop on an FMJ, but that's one problem with an FMJ is, it's good mass weight wise, but if you're big on FOC, you can't really play with it. Seems like a good arrow to work on FOC is a 8.5 to about a 9.5 grains per inch. Seems to be the best arrow to really manipulate your FOC to get it where you need to be. I forgot. An ACC style, which I think they brought them back. Of all the ones that incorporate metal into the shaft, the ACC, I think it's called AC Comp, I think is what they call it. They just brought it back, Easton did.
And that's
always been my favorite arrow. That has been the most consistent of any arrow I've ever shot as far as one that has aluminum in it. But we'll be able to, this is the cool thing about, and I'm so excited about this, I probably shouldn't even be telling you guys about that we're bringing it out because we're going to launch it next year, but it'll measure 360 degrees so that you'll always be able to spine align. And the consumer or the shop will be able to line so that you can index all your arrows the same. But here's the other cool factor is, if you've shot your arrows a bunch and a bunch and a bunch, you can't tell me that a carbon arrow, even as good as they're made, don't break down over time. With this, you're only as good as you can measure. I love using that saying. You can only as good as you can measure. So with the arrow being shot so much, you're like, well, they're 340 spines. They should group the same, even though I've shot them 3,000 times. With this, we'll be able to tell if that arrow, you know, because we always flex our arrows to make sure they're not split. But this way, you'll be able to see if the spine has internally broke down and or the deflection is different. So you can record it. Say, arrow number two has a deflection spine of a 342. You know, just like we do grain weight checking and building arrows by grains, you'll be able to build this by the spine that it is and say, okay, when I built this arrow, I indexed it so that where my spinal line is, and then I rolled it over, and this is the deflection. It's supposed to be a 340. It's checking out at, you know, 0.343, and you write that down. And then if it goes, you know, flexes down to, you know, 400, then you know that it's broke down and it's not
superior
to your first
one. Sweet.
Yeah, so everybody talks about spine and spine being, you know, within 1,000th and the grains being 1/1,000th, but nobody talks about measuring spine 360 degrees, which is incredibly important as far as spine aligning and making sure a carbon shaft is in line and shooting good with all your others.
That's awesome. What is it with these bone collector guys telling us about stuff before they were released? You know, Waddell told us about his shotgun before it was released.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he said he hadn't even told his dad yet. Or something, right? His wife or somebody. I'm like, don't be telling me. So you're going to get me in trouble.
They sent me one. I'm just proud I got one of them.
I know. I told him, I said, feel free to send it up here. I'll torture test it for you. It has to be a 20 gauge, though. I know he's got the 12. I think the 20 might be coming here soon if they haven't already. But regardless.
That new piece of equipment sounds awesome, though.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Last Chance is just going to take all my money.
Yeah.
Last Chance, more like Last Buck.
Yeah.
From a shop standpoint, it's just such a win-win, and it's the I've been knowing those guys for 20 plus years, long before they even built their first press. You know, Leon, the owner, or the guy who started it, he retired from General Motors, and we shot together tournament wise. And that's, do you know the story of why it's called Last Chance?
No, I don't.
He had a bunch of inventions, and none of them ever caught traction. And, you know, he just turned 80 like 3 weeks ago, and this was about 10 or 15 years ago. He said, look, he goes, I'm going to try this one last thing. I believe in this press, and this is it. Last chance. This is the last chance. This is it. He goes, I'm tired of throwing money at stuff that ain't taking off, and if this don't catch fire, I'm done. And it took fire.
Now he's got himself a $1 million business.
Oh, yeah, they're doing so well.
Yeah. one of the premier presses in the entire industry now, mm-hmm. right? Like it's a premier brand for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I know yep. this is something that you like to talk about too, but getting time behind the bow, you know. That, yeah. We talked about the spine alignment, and I know Bone, you could probably agree to this, and we certainly agree to this too. You can do everything that you want to that arrow. You can square off the ends, you can spine align, you can index, but I think to me the most important thing, just like a golfer, just like a guy that's shooting a gun, you got to get time behind the string. And if you don't have time behind the string, all this is a mute point. You know, if you can't shoot, then you can't.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you build a Ferrari of an arrow. If you're shooting it out of a Pinto, you're still screwed. So, how much? When is enough enough? And when do more? And we need to see this a lot more. But getting more people time behind the string and getting that accuracy dialed in and getting their form dialed in. You know, how many times have you seen? Again, no one's going to be able to see this, but how many times have you seen guys going? Right, and pulling and hurting their shoulders or you know, punching a trigger or all the crazy stuff that we see people shoot. I know you can speak to it some too, but time behind the string.
Oh, yeah. You know, fact of the matter, that is the most important thing. Yeah, fact of the matter is that is the most important thing, but, you know, we're built for convenience, and people don't want to hear that. You know, they like to shop, and you know, and a lot of times you're busy and you can't shoot as much, or a guy lives in an apartment, or he works till dark and he can't shoot. I mean, I get it. And you know, that's why we have we're able to, you know, you want to buy more accuracy, and you can to a certain extent, but yeah, you're right. It is the most important thing, muscle memory. However, I will preach this to the end of time is, you know, people talk about, well, man, I shot 100 shots last night. I would rather someone come in and tell me that they took, before work, they shot 5 arrows, and they poured their heart and soul into those 5 arrows before they left to get in the car and go to work, and then come home and shoot 5 more, and really thought about those 10 arrows that they're shooting a day, rather than saying, I just went out there and bent that string 100 times, because it always gets talked about, but it's, you know, practice makes perfect, but that's not true in archery. In my opinion, perfect practice makes perfect. You have to be practicing. And you can do that. Like, I try to tell people, like, yeah, if you don't have a ranger, you have to travel. So you can shoot in your house. You can set up a target at, you know, shoulder height that, you know, in one of your bedrooms or something, and fire off a few arrows. Yeah, you can work on that muscle memory. And then I think what helped me so much, like, especially when I worked in a shop or had my shop, and even now still, you know, working downstairs and stuff, it's just like listening to podcasts, talking about archery, even if I'm telling somebody correct ways to do things and stuff like that. It's just reiterating positive mental flow. So that helps, you know, just as your confidence, you know, thought. But, yeah, you have to develop a good shot. I mean, there's so many people that, you know, punch the trigger, and, you know, I get guys that really deep dive, and we have some great conversations, and, you know, they've spent so much time on trying to build this perfect arrow and this, that, and the other, and then we go outside shooting, they're hammering that trigger and clinching and doing all that. I'm like, man, we're just to your point.
Yeah.
We are wasting so much time on that. Until you can get a repetitive shoot-like machine shot, you're executing, and your muscle memory's, you know, you're never – that's why – like, when I had a shop, I was reluctant whenever I set up a new bow for someone. I was reluctant to let them shoot the bow through the paper on a new bow instantly. And what I would tell them is like, and this is not like I'm trying to get out of tuning the bow, but you guys know too, working in a shop.
Sure.
Give someone the bow that punches and has a bad hand torque, you're going to take hand torque all over it, meaning big time. And this is, you know, don't think that a, let the guy, you know, trust the guy. We as archery techs need to give that guy, or let that guy have trust in us and say, listen, this is what I always used to do. Like when I had a shore, I said, look, we got this bow set up. Trust me on where we got the center shot. It's tuned. It may not be exactly right, but this is what I like to do. I was like, let's get a 200 or 300 shots on the bow, meaning like make sure it fits him, talking through. And I had a list. I got a list of stuff that I print out and give to him. it's shot form and it, you know, execution, it tells them all the things to do to work on. I said, let's get 200 or 300 shots on this bow. I said, one, it lets the bow break in. If anything's going to show its head, it's going to do it in the first 200 or 300 shots. If I got to adjust the peep, if the peep's not doing it, just be patient with me. You go get 200 shots, you'll learn the program of the cam, you'll learn how the wall feels, the let off, the execution, you'll work on it, you'll build a relationship with that bow, and then after 200 or 300 shots, you come back to me, and, you know, one, it's more for him to work on himself than it is the bow, but then we'll address anything that you have. You know, and it's no charge, no problem. You bring it back to me, build a relationship with that bow, we'll tweak either a problem that you may be having or address something with the bow, and we'll get it finalized then. And probably half the people don't come back just because, you know, we've done our job as bow technicians and set the bow up good, and they're happy. They're, like, super happy, and everything's good. But nonetheless, from a shop standpoint, you're getting them back in the store. You know, they're coming back in the store to have that done, and then there's not that high pressure of the day of the sale. You know, I just spent $2,300, and my bow's not paper-tuned, and here I'm leaving this, and it's not shooting 340 foot a second. You just earned his trust by saying, listen, trust me, I've got it set. It's going to shoot good. It's going to shoot well for you. But more so than anything, we're going to end up chasing our tail if I let you shoot it through the meter. I mean, let you shoot it through the paper now because you presented hand torque. You're not doing the same thing twice. And I can show you because your tear is not going to be the same. Even if it's not tuned, it's going to shoot the same. If it's an untuned bow, it'll shoot the same crappy tear every time if you're like a machine. But if your hand torque's off, going to do something different every time. So let them know, say, you know, take it home, 200 or 300 shots, get at least that many. It could be 600 shots. When you have some free time, bring it back, and we'll go over everything and address what we need to address.
Yeah, and I can totally echo that because that's something, I mean, even like us, I mean, we think about that stuff constantly, but we're still, there's going to be times when I just pull a bad shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're chasing your tail around thinking that you screwed something up. Or how many times have I shot a 1-inch tear or something crazy, and then I turn right around and bullet hole it. And it's like, okay, well, clearly my form is off today. Like, it's just, you know, you can't go chasing yourself around for sure. And like you said, earning that guy's trust. Because, A, you just picked up a $2,300. You just spent $2,300, you know, $1,500 bow. You may have only shot in it three times in the shop. You know, you don't even know what it feels like. I mean, and here's the other thing is, too, I didn't buy the new Matthews this year simply because I felt like I was getting to a point working here that I always wanted to upgrade. You always want to upgrade. Well, guess what? I don't have a core relationship with the thing that's in my hand. You know, I don't have that 2 seasons, that 3 seasons end with something to where it really feels like an extension of my arm.
Yeah, I will say in our position that does get kind of tough. I mean, fortunately, you know, we've done it for so long, and you know, I have confidence in setting up a bow, but to your point, what you just said, like we have to shoot the newest bows every year because we're filming and such, and they usually send me the bows early so I get to play with them and stuff, and usually it's usually mid season, you know, it's always in October. I've worked all year long. I got a great relationship with this bow. This thing is tack driving. I'm ready to hunt with it, and then I get 3 weeks into season, and it's like, well, here's the new one. Try to get some kills with it. You know, do some reviews with it. Shoot this new bow, and I'm blessed. Yeah. I'm not complaining.
For sure.
If that was in February, it's not that big a deal. But right in the middle of October, November,
and for us, it always seems like these bows are being released like right around the rut, and you're like, last thing I want to do.
makes it for a shop owner.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think we did the Matthews that we did that video on. Remember we got that really good day? Or what bow was it that we got? The
Hoyt.
It was the RX-7, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the VTM, because that was the one that just released. But
this is the Ventum and
RX. Yeah, the Ventum Pro and the RX-7. Mm-hmm. We had a 50-degree day in December, and we were like, let's go outside. Like, let's get out of the shop. Let's go shoot this thing, man. Like, but yeah, we are blessed that we get we've shot every bow that was released this year. And we can kind of give our feedback and what we think and what we like and what we don't like. But me personally, I had to skip one at least to really see if, you know, if I can get even more comfortable with the one I already got. So,
yeah, for me, I'm super green in archery, T-bone. So, for me, I did the same thing. I just kept the same bow. I'm just trying to get used to the same bow and, you know, trying to make sure that I'm consistent everywhere. And like you said, you know, put your whole heart in into five shots instead of 100 is what I'm, we both kind of do that. So,
and then to add to that, you know, I tell people like, you know, even if you're just, you know, just firing a couple of shots to work on muscle memory and execution, you can take an extra set of sights, or you can even take like a pencil or a pen. And, you know, I tell people like when they're sitting there watching TV at night, you know, in my opinion, and the coaches, the Olympic coaches and stuff, like, God, I can't remember the word of, you know, like your vision or imagination means everything. Like, imagine you're going through that whole shot process. You know, if you really break shot process, you know, it's a 20 or 30 step process, you know, feet right, shoulder width right, you know, and then you're going through all these, and you learn these on a conscious level to where when you get out there, you're basically on autopilot. And the only thing that you're really paying attention to is, you know, once you get the pin on the target is aiming and then
execute.
So I tell people, like, just take a pin and, like, aim at the light switch on the wall, like in a commercial break or something, you're on TV, and just say, just like, hey, I'm going to hit that and just work yourself through it. Like, I'm executing and there's the pin, I'm squeezing, push, pull, squeeze, aim, push, pull, and then the shot broke. So that's basically shooting in your mind. So you're getting used to that. That's something that you can do every evening while you're sitting there, you know, you and your wife are watching Netflix or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And aim stuff on the TV, and you're reiterating those positive thoughts so that you're, you know, you're more squared away time to shoot. And, you know, work on the execution part of it so much, because we all know how to aim. It's just you got to get the other stuff where it's on autopilot, so you're like a machine.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, or you know, do it during a commercial break when Ohio State's beating up on Georgia.
Yeah.
Oh, just kidding. But or
practicing, buddy.
Yeah. Or even like, you know, and you know, you kind of said this earlier too. Everything, once the arrow leaves your bow, it's out of your hands at that point. So take away the aiming, set yourself up a block target, you know, from me to you, you know, 2 feet. And just sit in a chair and shoot right into the block target in your basement. I mean, close your eyes and let one go. See how that feels. Like, it, there's so much more that you can do. You know, one thing that I always picked up is my, to the begrudgment of my wife, my basement is exactly 18 yards if I stand at one wall all the way to the other wall, you know. And I'll just shoot into a block target during the winter because, you know, I'm not going outside on a 30-degree rainy Ohio day. Or another thing that we found a lot too, you got the hat on. Shooting these 3D, I mean, we're in 3D season right now. Go find an ASA event. Go find a fun shoot. Go shoot at a doll sheep 60 yards through the woods, because guess what? When that doll sheep becomes a whitetail at 20, it's easy. I mean, it makes it so much more easy, you know?
Yeah, your confidence level is there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
To add something I'd like to about blind bell shooting, and so many people talk about that, I would recommend to people, to, you know, everybody talks about closing your eyes. I don't recommend doing that. And the reason why I don't recommend, there's a different version of blind belling, meaning, like, I'm not saying don't have it, you know, at 2 yards and work on the execution of the shots, but instead of blind belling, so that you're working on the execution where your eyes are closed. Because if you notice, if you pay attention, whenever you're anchored in, you know, we're all looking across the bridge of our nose when we're anchored. Well, when you close your eyes automatically center back here, so that you start focusing on standing up like this, so your eyes are not focused this way and your balance is not focused this way. So what I tell people to do is either take your sight completely off your bow and shoot in a dimly lit room to where you can't really see anything and have a blank target, or if you don't want to take your sight off your bow, just take a piece of tape and cover up your pin to where you can't see your pin, and then leave your eyes open. But don't you know, just like stare at a blank bell and no pins. Don't actually aim. Just, you know, have all your concentration and everything and your balance going this way. But don't worry about aiming. Just worry about executing, because, you know, execution is key, so that you're machine-like, and then you can bring the aiming in a little later on down the line. Or you do the aiming like we're talking about, sitting in the chair, or just aim without shoot without aiming. Something else. Do y'all have a shooting machine? Y'all ever messed around with a shooting machine much?
Like a hooter shooter?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. No, we don't have one at the shop either.
I was going to say something that helps confidence-wise when you're using a hooter shooter is, like, just, I mean, it hits home. It's one thing for me to tell you, but if you ever see this, you could take a bow and tune it real crappy to where the arrow's just flying down through there like this. And it's flying, it's really horrible. And you put it in a hooter shooter and back up to 40 yards, it'll put it in the same hole every time. Because even if it's flying terrible, because that bow, that machine, has the exact same torque and is executing exactly the same way, and it'll put a, even the arrow's flying, woo, 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 poof, it does the same thing every time. It just shows you, what that shows us is how much the human factor translates to magnifying the flaws in our form. So we're tuning bows for forgiveness so that it makes up for our shortcomings, because we're doing something different between anticipation or, you know, flinching or muscle tension in your hand, and hand torque magnifies the flaws in our form. So that's why we're tuning bows, is for forgiveness. Whereas, you know, it's like, golly, man, I know it's not the bow, because this crappy tuned bow is putting in the hole every time.
And here, yeah, doubt.
I can't even hit a baseball every time at 40 yards. So guess who that is? That's me.
Yep, that's this guy right here, right?
Yeah. That's why we should work on us.
Well, we've been going for a little while now. I told you I wasn't going to let you go as long as Waddell. But here we are. We're just about as close. I'd rather sit here and talk. I could sit here and talk for another 2 hours. But if we can, let's go ahead. I know you're on social and Facebook and everything. But outside of Outdoor Channel, where can people see T-Bone on social media? And then we'll let you get out.
Yeah. Anything Bone Collector, of course, on all the, TikTok and Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram is Bone Collector. And then for myself, is T-Bone Outdoors on all those same platforms. Our YouTube channel is really growing big at Bone Collector. I'm working on the company I was working with. They lost my passwords and stuff from my YouTube. I got like 6,000 followers from like 12 years ago, and we're trying to keep capturing those. So we're trying how to get back those, so we're going to start doing a little bit more stuff on that, but we appreciate everybody, we appreciate you guys. I mean, I know this is my first time talking to you guys, and you guys are for sure got a top shelf show. I really appreciate you having me on, and you really I asked some great questions. I can tell that you guys are kind of gurus, and can't you're like sponges. You can't get enough information. I can tell that right now.
Well, it's not every day you get someone like yourself on, so we want to make sure, you know, like I said, as soon as Ben smacks those hands together, I don't care if it's my best friend that I hunt with all the time or if it's someone like you, I always want to soak up as much. I know you do too.
Yep.
And so, you know, I still remember the day that he texted me when he said Waddell was coming on, and then I just started thinking, okay, well, there's Waddell, okay, and then Waddell knows this person, and then T-Bone knows this person, and it's just the world that we're in right now is awesome, because – and I've heard you say this before, but we're just sitting around having a digital deer camp, and that's exactly how we feel, man. And so we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule and talking with us just as much as you do us talking to you. And, you know, hopefully this isn't the last time. Hopefully we talk to you again after a successful season and seeing you kill some more critters this year. And I'm looking forward to a continued friendship with you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, guys. Hey, and whatever you guys need, I really enjoyed it. I hope it comes across this way. But you know, even as many years as I've been doing it, I want people to see that my passion for archery and bow hunting and stuff, it's still there. I just ooze it. I mean, I just can't get enough of it. I mean, every evening or every day, I'm spending time downstairs working on stuff and building a better site, and you know, I just think about this stuff all the time. I'm not saying I'm archery guy by no means. I'm the first one to tell you that it's very opinionated, and a lot of people got a lot of great ideas and stuff. It's just, you know, if there is such thing as a team legacy, I just love, you know, sharing what I've learned and what I know, and hopefully it helps some folks out there. And I love, you know, people that have the same passion as I do. I just love, you know, sharing thoughts and having chit chats about it. So. Yeah, we never turn down any radio or anything like that, me, Michael, and Nick. So if you haven't had Nick on already, he would be glad to do the show.
Oh, for sure. We'll get the whole trio and see which one did better. We'll compare you against each other. How's that sound?
Yeah. Well, as long as we're not doing a 40-yard dash, I'll be all right.
Awesome.
Well, sir, thank you again. And like I said, we look forward to talking to you some more in the future. And best of luck going forward with everything you have on the health side as well as the hunting side.
Thank you, guys. Hey, keep up the great work, man. I really appreciate it.
All right, everyone, that is all we have for you today. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with T-Bone. He is a top-notch guy, and it's always a treat for us to bring in these big names in the industry for you. Hopefully, the conversation inspired you to look at your archery equipment and see what you can improve upon. At the least, it inspired you to pick up your bow and send some arrows downrange. As always, we appreciate you listening, and until the next time, enjoy the pursuit.